This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
We are back talking Division 3 lacrosse. We have a special guest. It's Ken Stockman here. Ken, you were just coming off of the tail end of the face-off yearbook. You know, I kind of took the lead on the Division 2 section. You were the main person doing the Division 3 section of the face-off yearbook. So that's a huge project. A lot of fun, but a lot of work. Overall, Ken, what's it like just kind of being down that process? And overall, any impressions, surprises of the D3 landscape? After basically doing more work and learning more about the Division 3 landscape than anybody else in the country knows right now.
Yeah, thanks again for having me. The face-off yearbook, it's a lot of fun to work on. It's a huge project, huge undertaking, but I really enjoy it, mainly because, like you said, it kind of reacquaints you with everything this year. You know, you sort of can forget about last year. You think, oh, this team, you know, did really well last year, and then you look back at them, and, well, shoot, they graduated like six of their top players, so maybe they aren't going to be as good as I thought they might be this year. So it's a lot of fun. You get an opportunity to talk to a lot of coaches, see where they're at. I spoke to probably more than half of the team's coaches in the top 30 this year. I got emails from a bunch of the other ones. And then, you know, we send out the questionnaires to the coaches and get a lot of those back too, which are really valuable because you get to see where the coaches' heads are at on a lot of things. One of the questions on there is what's your top 20 coming into this next year? And you kind of get to see what their impressions of the upcoming year are. You know, some don't answer it. Some just list maybe top five or six, but you kind of see where they're at. And it's a lot of fun kind of really getting you set up for the upcoming season.
Ken, you are in the heart of everything for the lacrosse world up in upstate New York. What was your fall like? What kind of action did you see in fall ball? You know, whether it be D3, D1, D2, whatever up there.
So I took in the scrimmages over at Nazareth. Michigan came up and Cornell. That was a lot of fun. First opportunity to see both Cornell and Michigan with new head coaches this year. Both of them look pretty good. D1, Nazareth was really surprising and did a lot better than I thought they would. You know, when they were playing those teams, you know, Michigan and Cornell, they sort of played their younger players, their backups, that kind of thing. So it wasn't as if Nazareth was taking on the starters for those programs, but really, you know, they looked well-rounded. They returned some players. They got a couple new guys in, and they're gonna be a tough team this year in the Empire 8. There's a couple other things. You know, I took in some high school tournaments and a couple things like that, but I didn't get out to too much other college stuff.
In terms of the D3 landscape, I was able to see RIT and Cortland in person at the event that was held at Lemoyne. Lemoyne was part of that as well as OCC, and that was a really kind of eye-opening event for me as well. But the big news in your areas is the Rattlers moving. And Ken, I just kind of wanted your local perspective. You know, I know this doesn't really have much to do with Division III, but Rochester Rattlers no longer in Rochester, going to Dallas. As someone who's from up there, what was kind of your take on the team and the support of the community and just some of the things around that team in its final years?
Yeah, sure. You know, it's really upsetting that they're gone. I wasn't a big supporter of them. Not that I didn't support what they were doing, just that I didn't get out to too many games. You know, the community's going to miss them. But I think in this area, we're just kind of, I don't want to say oversaturated with lacrosse, but there's a lot of lacrosse up here. And I'd find myself a lot of times, and they'd have a Sunday game. And, you know, I'd have been at a youth tournament all day with my son or, you know, out watching my nephew play some high school lacrosse. And by the end of the day, when it's time for that game to take place, you know, I'm kind of lacrossed out by then. By the time the 4 o'clock start time comes around, I'm ready to sit on my couch, you know, and with the season starting so early, if I have the opportunity to get out to see a game, you know, I'm going to be at RIT, I'm going to be at NAS or any of the other local colleges watching them play before I'm going to be over at a Rattlers game. You know, it's disappointing in that, you know, we kind of pride ourselves on being sort of another hotbed up here, but not being able to support a team, you know, it's kind of a bad look for us, I guess, but at the same time, I completely get it. You know, there's just so much lacrosse up here. We have the Nighthawks that draw well and are a huge, have a huge following up here. And then just, you know, high school lacrosse, youth lacrosse, all that's so big. So it's kind of understanding that people aren't getting out to the games as much as, you know, they had hoped.
Yeah, and some, changes of venues over the years, kind of, I feel like fans weren't able to get into a routine up there of where they're going to go see the Rattlers and things like that. So disappointing. I think everyone, as you can read on insidethelacrosse.com, Kyle Devitt's piece on coach Tim Sudan, I think he's one of the best guys in the sport, and everyone said that he's not going to be coaching in Major League Lacrosse this year. But obviously hope the Rattlers do well and hope the league does well in Dallas and we see some growth potential there. But moving back to Division III lacrosse, Ken, I just wanted to kind of highlight some of the most interesting things that came across my desk in the Faceoff yearbook. I'm not going to give away the full top 30 teams that we put there, but I am going to highlight a few teams that whether I just thought there's something very interesting about them. Maybe there's an argument that they're ranked too high, too low. Just kind of get some discussion started, and might as well start at the top. The number one team in the Faceoff yearbook, the Salisbury Seagulls, the defending back-to-back champions, 12-time champions, the Seagulls. Obviously, there's not much argument ever for putting Salisbury as the number one team in the country, but given the losses on the offensive side of the ball, is it possible that this is a little bit of a stretch, or maybe we should have given the number two team, Wesleyan, the benefit there and put them as number one? Your take on Salisbury and how they'll overcome some of those losses?
Yeah, sure. Like they say at Salisbury, they don't rebuild, they reload. And I think that's, what we're going to expect from them this year. They're still going to be strong on offense. I know they lost that attack that scored, nearly a third of their goals, I think, if not more. But they got Melton moving back to attack, which is his natural position. He played it one or two games last year in the beginning of the season, and he had a great freshman year at midfield, but he moves back to his natural position. I think he's going to be an absolute star for them for the next 3 years. They got some strong midfielders coming back in Gwynn and Reynolds. And then when you get to the defense, you got the returning defender of the year. And then the guy that's probably the only opportunity to beat him out would be his teammate in Will Nowesnik. So you got Kyle Tucker back, and then who's the defending player of the year. And then you got Nowesnik, who's right on his heels to earn that award. So, they are an absolutely stacked team on that end of the field. They got a ridiculous defensive midfield. And in goal, I know they graduated their starter from last year, but they are probably going to have Anthony Stravakis back in goal, who started a few games for them back in 16. So it's not like they're starting fresh with somebody that doesn't have experience. They have somebody coming in that's going to be between the pipes that's, played in some big games and started with them in the past. So, yeah, they lost a lot. You can make an argument for Westland. You can make an argument for a couple other teams, but you really can't go wrong ranking Salisbury number one.
Definitely. I kind of remember about this time last year, talking about this and kind of both of us in agreement about, no matter what happens, Salisbury is going to be there at least the last weekend of the season, probably hoisting the trophy. Guy that I love for this team is Jeremiah LeClaire. I feel like we just got to see him improve so much over his career, especially that last year, as I think short stick D'Amidi maybe wasn't a unit of strength for them at the beginning of the season, but it just came on and made that defense even stronger as the season went on and they won the national championship. But the number two team behind them, Wesleyan, representing the NESCAC, it's a team that set a school record last year, 20 wins, went to the NCAA semifinals, experienced, hardworking unit. Can we kind of say that Harry Stanton is the most exciting player in Division III lacrosse right now?
Yeah, I think he's taken that over. He's definitely the most interesting player. When I spoke to Coach Raba, he explained him. He called him unorthodox, was the word he used. He dropped 86 goals last year. He can score from all kinds of angles, crazy shots. He's just the player you have to watch right now in D3 for sure. That team, really deep. Tons of scoring back. They're going to be really strong. I certainly considered them for the number one spot. They return more than Salisbury does on the offensive end and probably overall. But, until they get there, till they hoist that trophy, like you said, till they get to that weekend, it's hard to put them at number one. But they are a team. 2 years ago, they lost a ton of one-goal games. Last year, they were winning those games. They're winning them by more than one. And I think this year, they have the majority of those players back, and they should do even better, I think. But put them above Salisbury is a tough call right now.
definitely going to be at least a very fun team to watch with all that returning talent and just the way that they can put the ball into the net. Ken, a little departure. You're a Giants fan, right?
Yeah.
How's life as a Giants fan after today?
Life is not good. Life's not very good at all. I'm really disappointed in the coaching staff, in the general manager, and anybody that was responsible for making that decision to bench Eli Manning. He was the classiest guy that's ever played for the team.
Well, good news for you is you're also a Grateful Dead fan, and Dead and Company are on tour. Ken, you need to get SeatGeek so you can get tickets to the sports and concerts that you want to go to. Go catch John Mayer with Dead and Company and watch that show. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy and sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. Nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or band in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action. I have SeatGeek on my phone. I'm going to a show this weekend seeing the Descendents in Baltimore, a great punk band. SeatGeek's the easiest way to shop for tickets. Can be anywhere, just a few taps, instantly find seats. Best of all, you can get $20 off your first purchase, whether it's going to go see the Giants or switch to the Bills Mafia or go see the Grateful Dead. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LACROSSE today. That's promo code LACROSSE for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Ken, back to the business here. RIT is a team that I saw in the fall. Team with some question marks. You know, we have them at number 5 in the faceoff yearbook. Question marks at attack. It's kind of one of those weird years for there. I feel like RIT is going to go under the radar for much of the year. I think they're going to steadily improve. There are question marks, but I think, at least from seeing them in fall ball, there's the seeds of something really good there. So maybe just kind of flying under the radar just a little bit might be good for this team. And maybe they'll pounce at the right time, and that's, you know, what RIT has wanted is the national championship.
Yeah, they're a team that maybe peaked a little early, you know, the past few years. They definitely have a ton of talent on that team, so I'm not worried about that. They're another team like Salisbury, though, that graduated a really high-scoring attack unit that's been there for a number of years. But they are they're going to be tough. I think their strength is going to be on defense. They have Alex Maruna, who's back. He was a freshman last year, sophomore this year. By the end of the season, they had him guarding, you know, the top threat on the opponent's attack. So he's a kid that's going to be really good for a long time for them. They have seen Chandler Allen back. Their short stick D Mitty of Ben Tackett is arguably one of the best in the country. And then at long stick Mitty, they have that tradition right now where they, you know, they've had Hasek, and then they had J.D. Hall. Well, right behind Hall last year was Eli Salama, who's an absolute monster at the position. And then they also have Trevor Smith, who was there last year but was injured for part of the season, who they're real high on it as well. So they're going to be, you know, a tough team. They're going to be there at the end of the season. But like you said, they're going to take a little bit of time to come around. They think they might even actually be stronger in goal this year than they were last year with the sophomore Walker Hare, who's back this year. Played it very sparingly last year, but they're really, really high on him as well. So I think they're going to be there at the end of the year. They might drop a couple early ones, but they are definitely going to be another team to contend with in the North.
Yeah, I remember talking with Coach Kuhn after that event at Lemoyne, and I remember just saying, like, how do you guys keep getting these LSMs? Because there's another guy out there who looks great, and it was Trevor Smith, you know, who was back to full strength, and he looked like he kind of picked off right where those guys left off. So it's definitely just one of those positions that RIT is, if you're going to be one of the best long sticks in the country, RIT is a good spot to kind of look for. But moving down south to Gettysburg is a team that I feel like there's just a lot of buzz about this year. I feel like a lot of people are talking about, you know, this is a year that Gettysburg is going to make a pretty serious run. I think they're really confident in their team. Obviously, they have a guy who's going to be midfielder of the year potential in Jack Harvey. And I don't know. It's tough. Obviously, the South is going to go through Salisbury, but there's just a lot of positivity around Gettysburg. Is that your feeling about this team?
Yeah, they're one of the teams when I was looking into the who's coming back and that sort of thing, putting the list together. They really jumped off with me as a team that had a lot more than I thought they were going to. Like you mentioned, Jack Harvey, midfielder of the year candidate, really good player for them. They also have Tim Brady in goal, who's a goalie, a candidate for goalie of the year. So they have both ends of the offense and in defense pretty much covered with two of the best players at their position in the country. So you can't really beat that. And then they have a lot of guys that are going to contribute. Tommy Heller's a great player that's been there for a number of years now, and Blake Gray on attack. So they do have some players there. Depth might be the question mark, but I think that if anybody's going to compete with Salisbury in the South, it's going to be Gettysburg this year.
And then right behind them, you have Cabrini at number 8 in the country, and they're just a team that for some reason they weren't really on my radar last year. I mean, 17-4, obviously they kind of ran through their conference there.
Yeah, they were a team that had some younger guys last year that were putting up big numbers for them. Jordan Krug, Timmy Brooks, Matt Leparo is coming back this year. So they've got some guys that have been there and are looking to take that next step for them. Joey Hoey at defense is a heck of a player for them. And like you said, they kind of cruise through their conference, so they kind of go under the radar. They start accumulating all those wins, but nobody's really paying attention to them because they're their conference is just not that tough. But you got to remember that they were the one team to beat Salisbury last year. And I think when that happened, surprising as it was, I think a lot of people chalked that up to Salisbury having a bad night and not so much looking at the strength of Cabrini's team. So they're our team that return a ton. They're going to be very, very talented. But yeah, they kind of get forgotten about when they run into their conference schedule there and just start rattling off 20-point wins and stuff. But they are going to be another team to watch down south.
Yeah, that win was it's a Friday night win, and it just kind of got disappeared by the ensuing weekend. And I think that Salisbury might have played York a few days after that, and people were kind of just saying, "Oh, Salisbury had a short week, and whatever it wasn't didn't give them the due for that win." So that win kind of disappeared out of the consciousness almost immediately, which is not fair for Cabrini, but obviously, Salisbury proved to be the best team in the country. A team that I loved last year was Ithaca, and the Bombers, 13-4, lots of scoring returns from that team, and also a change of conference. They're moving from the Empire 8 to the Liberty. So if you can just say, give the landscape of the Liberty Conference and kind of who their rivals are going to be and what that means for the D3 North.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge move. That's one of the big things in Division III this year is it sort of takes the Liberty and makes it definitively the strongest conference in upstate anyways, with the move from Ithaca to that conference. And then the E8 sort of takes a hit losing one of their top teams. Now Stevens Institute of Technology kind of becomes the front runner in the Empire Eight. But with Ithaca moving, it gives RIT another challenger. You got St. Lawrence in that conference. Clarkson's been coming on a little bit. Union, I mean, that is a very, very difficult conference. And Ithaca is going to be a lot tougher for them, I think. But at the same time, they're going to build up some more quality wins, quality opponents, and their strength of schedule is going to be a lot tougher. But you're right. They're going to score a lot of goals. They return a lot. They were on fire last year. They had only lost a couple of games. They lost their goalie towards the end of the season to injury. Otherwise, I think they probably could have gone a little further than they had. I think that was a big loss for them, kind of understated. Losing the leader on defense it could be pretty detrimental to a lot of teams, and I think that kind of lost them some momentum at the end of the year. But they're going to be back this year. They got lots of good players. Jay Cotton's a tough player. Josh Delapuca, Steven Morrell, and then they got Winston Wenham, who's back on defense and will be their star back there. So they're going to be a tough team. A little tougher schedule, I would say, but they'll be all right.
Yeah, there was a point last season where I thought they were absolutely unbeatable and going to compete for the national championship. I really definitely thought that. But like you said, injuries happen in this sport, and sometimes they can make a season go sideways. Obviously, a great year nonetheless for them. But there was definitely a point there where they felt like they were legit going to be a national championship contender. Going to challenge you on one of your rankings here. number 15, Franklin and Marshall Diplomats. Some people in the office were kind of saying that this should be the team that should be ranked higher out of your top 30 that you put out there. Coach Todd Cavallaro's team, a lot of returning starters, really high-scoring attack, a lot of depth. Is this a team that we can maybe see finish a lot stronger than what its preseason ranking is?
Yeah, I like F&M. They're in the Centennial, which is a tough conference. We already talked about Gettysburg and how good they're going to be this year. There's also Dickinson in there and, you know, an improved Washington College. So I think that their schedule is going to be a little tougher than it has been in the past. But, you know, with Sean Rogers there, who's an absolute stud, and then they got Kevin Mollahan coming back, who was the Centennial Rookie of the Year and was an All-American as a freshman, they're not going to have any problems scoring goals. So I think, you know, you guys are right. They could move up in the rankings for sure, but I think that being in that conference and playing that schedule is going to be difficult for them. So, you know, it's kind of tough to say. They're sort of middle of the pack of that conference, you know, higher end, of course, but they're just tough to read right now for me. So that's why they were there. But I certainly would listen to an argument to remove them higher.
Definitely. And I hate when people make that argument, because the argument isn't they should be higher. It's who should they be above. And you look at the teams right above them. You look at a team like Bates. Obviously, Bates has some losses that they have to deal with in graduating three first-team All-Americans. But you could certainly make an argument for Bates at number 14. You can make an argument for Bates at number 15 or 16 as well. It's not exactly easy to make these and predict how the whole season's going to go and how every injury is going to break and how every ball is going to bounce. So definitely think we're in the right wheelhouse there with their ranking, but it's going to be fun to see that conference with you know, some powers in there and what they can do there. Another team, though, that I think a lot of people will just be very surprised when they open the book and they're flipping through it and seeing them at number 17, and that's Stevenson. You know, this is a team that isn't that far off of a national championship now. You know, obviously they host the biggest event in D3. They're one of the most well-known programs in Division III lacrosse. They have the beautiful stadium and a lot of things going for them. Stevenson at 17. Ken, what are you seeing from them?
Yeah, just based on what they have coming back from last year, I don't see how they're going to score a lot of goals. I think they're going to struggle on offense. So that's kind of where they wound up. That's why they wound up where they are. But, you know, certainly, you know, they're a team that a lot of transfers land at. You never know who's going to be there until, you know, almost the first game for them. So they're the team for me that I think can have the most movement going up or, you know, up in the rankings. But, you know, right now, just with Kyle Karezian, I think, and I'm probably butchering his name, and JT Thelen are pretty much their only threats on offense. And, you know, defensively, they have DeFazio, but they have a new goalie. It's really, you know, like you said, looking at the teams that are above them, it's tough to make the argument to move them up. And, you know, I think the Mustang Classic is going to be the biggest, you know, the biggest challenge for them. If they come out of that weekend with one or two wins, you know, then we'll know what they're all about. But again, they play in a weak conference. They're going to accumulate some wins. So maybe they'll move up, but they do play one of the tougher schedules in the country. So we're going to find out what they're all about pretty quick.
Yeah, they always play a tough schedule. Last year, unfortunately, that Stevenson-Salisbury game got, I don't think it was snow. I think it was just extreme cold weather or something like that. Ended up canceling that game, which was unfortunate. But the Mustang Classic is have you heard anything about some of the teams that are going to be there? Any new teams going to be at the Mustang this year?
I haven't heard any new teams that are going to be there. No, I haven't heard the lineup. I think it might be the same as last year. I'm not entirely sure.
Always one of the best weekends for lacrosse. If you're in the Baltimore area up near Owings Mills where Stevenson is, definitely check that out because it's kind of the best of the best of Division III lacrosse. No place you get to see kind of north-south teams meet like that. I've kind of always lobbied that there should be a Division II version of it. Obviously, there's not a host school in the Mid-Atlantic, but if they could find a neutral site game to kind of do some sort of D2 north-south showcase. Obviously, there's some regional considerations there with the way they had to build their schedule and neutral site games. Obviously, it's tough for the travel for both teams, but I would love to see that happen to grow the Division II game and showcase some of those great programs there as well. Last thing I want to touch on in your rankings is number 25, Bowdoin. And the reason I just want to kind of use them to talk about the NESCAC. And so many teams ranked in the top 25 from the NESCAC. And they're so close together. I could see any of these teams beating any of the other teams that are in there. Ken, how do you decipher this conference and kind of make sense of it in the preseason? Obviously, things can change so much, but maybe what's the determinant factor that made Wesleyan number one, where you had Tufts, where you had Bates? What are some of the things in this conference that you saw?
Right, yeah. I mean, again, they're going to be probably the deepest, most talented conference in the country. So, yeah, there's like six teams in the top 25 from there. The deciphering factor, I guess you just kind of look at history, who's coming back, who got hot last year. I mean, I think Wesleyan obviously is the front runner right now with the most returners. And then you kind of assume Tufts is going to, you know, turn things around in Coach Denofalo's second year. So, you know, they're up high. And Amherst has, you know, you just look at, there's so many stars in that conference you're right, it is really hard. You know, we could have made an argument to get a couple more teams in the top 25, top 30 from that conference. But, you know, you really just kind of look at who's coming back and what they did last year and just do your best, you know. You could throw a dart at the wall and see where it lands and put a team, you know, put the rankings up there for the most part. They're just so, it's such a good conference top to bottom.
And really, in terms of, you know, the face-off yearbook is all about kind of setting the table for the season and some sort of, it's a little bit predictive in nature in terms of trying to order the teams in a way that makes sense for the readers. And that's almost impossible with the NESCAC teams, given they don't really do anything in the fall. So it's even less to go off of than say, a team like RIT that I've seen in person and that you're very familiar with in addition to that. So you don't really have that kind of data, that new data to kind of go off of for these teams. Mm-hmm. It's more of what's returning, what's coming back, maybe some insight that the coaches can give you. But it's really, you know, when it comes time to the spring season, it's a fresh slate for all those teams.
Yeah, but in a way, they're sort of, you know, more predictable than some of the other conferences in the fact that they don't take on a lot of transfers. There's not a lot of people leaving. So you're pretty confident in what's coming back. But it's funny when you talk to any of the coaches from the NESCAC and you're sort of like, you know, how are you guys looking this year? And they're kind of like, well, I heard, you know, they look all right in captain's practices. You know, they can't be there. It's such an odd situation. It'd be scary if they could start practicing in the fall too, and these coaches could get a head start on all this stuff. But they're going to be fun to watch this year for sure.
Awesome, Ken. One last thing I'm going to ask you before we let you go. I know it's getting late at night. We're recording this on Tuesday night here. One thing that's going to surprise people, one team or one player that's going to really surprise people this coming season?
One team. I have to pick a team to come up and surprise people. I really like Hampton Sydney this year. I think that they're going to surprise some people for sure in the ODAC. I know they won it last year, but a lot of people look at that as, you know, just a hot streak at the end of the season. But I really like what they're doing down there. I like the coach. I like what he's doing. And I think that they could be a team that could surprise a lot of people and jump up and make a little run at the end of the year for sure.
Another one of these teams that just kind of has 50 goal scorers all over, 40, 50 goal scorers on that team. It's amazing some of these, the numbers some of these programs are putting up on in the Division III level. Ken, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Have a great night, and you know, appreciate you talking and kind of sympathizing about your Giants and the way they're treating Eli Manning, and talking a little bit of D3 lacrosse.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, man.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.